As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the first April edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. I'm Ian Menes alongside Sean McAdoo, aka Down Goes Brown. Ahead on this episode of the podcast, both Connor McDavid and Nate MacKinnon find themselves in the highlight reels in the National Hockey League for the wrong reasons. We'll chat all about superstar players crossing the line, and is what MacKinnon did the worst thing ever done by somebody who's won the Lady Bing. Hey, the Buffalo Sabres finally win a game, and now we ask the question if all of the misery from Buffalo has suddenly shifted over to Philadelphia. Erik Karlsson has an epic answer during a press conference, maybe giving us the sound bite, pun intended, of the year. And this week in hockey history looks back at the first emergency backup goalie to really grab the headlines, and no, it was not David Ayers, and the ultimate April Fool's prank pulled off by a Hall of Fame defenseman. I got to ask you this, Sean, because I asked Haley about this on Monday with the Athletic Hockey Show. It's, you know, April Fool's Day pranks. You are known as arguably, actually not even arguably, you are, let's just go ahead and call it, you're the wittiest person in hockey on social media. I'm giving you the mantle, you get the crown. But my question is, does the wittiest, funniest person in hockey, in social media, does he lean into April Fool's Day and like, kind of play some pranks on the kids, or does he hate it because he thinks it's so lame?
Yeah, I think it can be fun with kids, although we didn't do anything this year. I think even my group is outgrowing it a little bit. Most of the stuff you see is pretty dumb. You know, the corporate stuff, the wacky, hey, let's put something on the homepage. It's I'm not a big fan of that. But I will say that to anyone listening to this podcast today, any takes that I have today that you think are especially bad, those are just April Fool's pranks. That's just me playing a joke. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, actually, that's the perfect way to jump into this. So let's talk about what I guess at the start of the week, this you would have thought this was a prank when you would say that both Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon could possibly be facing the wrath of the Department of Player Safety. You would be like, what are you talking about? These are two of the cleanest players. In the case of MacKinnon, he's the reigning Lady Bing Trophy winner. So that gives you a sense of how honest these guys usually play the game. But McDavid with an attempted elbow on the head of Jesperi Kotkaniemi of the Habs, and then Nate MacKinnon on Wednesday night, Sean, with a helmet toss at Connor Garland during a skirmish. He gets essentially gets the game, the rest of the game for that with a game misconduct. Let's start by looking at these two episodes, McDavid and MacKinnon, and ask you, like, is one of them infinitely worse than the other?
You know what? It's kind of tough to say, because especially when it comes to the Connor McDavid play, I mean, you're talking about throwing an elbow at somebody's head. That's no joke. We've seen guys get hurt pretty badly on plays like that. And so if that's what happens, then that's the more serious play. I'm still confused about that play, because unlike just about any other controversial hit, there always seem to be 19 different angles that they turn around and show you. And with this one, I've only seen the one. Like, I've seen the one angle right from the front, generally at full speed, where it does look like he comes across the late hit and goes right up high with an elbow. But it's tough to say, you know, is it would it look different from a different angle? Is it actually, did he maybe catch him in the chest and then the arm flies up? You know, it's hard to say, and it's a strange one to me, because again, like, you know, when Tom Wilson does something, there's 35 different angles, and we watch them all in slow-mo, and yeah, we analyze and we pick it apart and freeze frame it. And with this one, it was almost as if it was like, oh, who threw that? Oh, that was Connor McDavid. Yeah, we'll show you one real quick replay and then we're moving on. And I'm going to assume that the Department of Player Safety had all of the angles, and they didn't decide that it was worth a suspension. So I guess maybe this is one of those times where you kind of have to take their word for it, which is fine, because I'm sure they've built up a lot of credibility and benefit of the doubt with most hockey fans.
I'm really torn on this too, because it's funny. I went on, I was on Montreal radio, yes, on Wednesday of this week, and I was on Chris Nyland's show, and they asked me, hey, what do you think about the McDavid elbow on Kotkaniemi? And I, you know, I did think it was at least suspendable, in terms of there looked like there was some intent there. And mm-hmm. I think,
and it was late
serious
too. And that's part of it. This wasn't like an otherwise clean hit where maybe he got a little up higher than he won. This was a late hit coming across.
Yeah. And so, you know, I go on there, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I would like to have seen him get a game. Like, to me, the $5,000 fine really does nothing. Like, it really does nothing. It's like, why bother? It's, you can find that if you're McDavid, you find that in the cushions of your couch. You're not, mm-hmm. that's not a deterrent to do this again. So I said, I'd like to see him get a game or two. And then Chris Nyland and his co-host Sean Campbell come on. They're like, actually, we didn't really have a huge problem with the hit. I'm like, what? This is Montreal radio. I thought you guys would be all over this.
But I mean, you know, it's Chris Nyland. I kind of figure he can't exactly sit there with the little choir boy face and say that how could anyone ever do something like that? And you know what? This is, you know, Chris Nyland's from that era, and it's sort of an old school way of thinking, but there was a time where you loved to see this from a star player. This was a guy taking care of his own business. He was sending a message, letting everyone know. I mean, there was a time where star players were told, hey, somebody comes at you and it's going to happen. You feed them your stick. You get your stick up high and put it in their teeth, and that'll send a message to everyone else in the league not to do that to you. So, I don't know. There is a part of me, and I feel like Oiler fans won't be on board with this, but there is a part of me that feels like it almost would have been better for Connor McDavid if there had been a suspension. Just a short one. One game, let's say. Because when you do that, the way it played out now, you know, it was a hit that looked bad, whether it was or not. He doesn't get anything. You're right. A fine is meaningless in this situation. And now this just makes it so that a guy who is going to be targeted at the best of times, this just opens the door for people to say, oh, well, okay, well, I mean, if Connor McDavid can do it to other guys, we can throw that hit on Connor McDavid. You didn't suspend him. The rules can't be different for the Stars than it is for everyone else. So I guess it's fair game. Whereas if you had given him, like I said, even one game, suddenly now the message is, okay, we suspended Connor McDavid for throwing that hit. So what do you think is going to happen to you if you turn around and go after him with a hit like that? Of course, we're going to throw the book at you too. The precedent's been set. We're treating everyone equal. Stay away from this guy. And, you know, I just wonder, and fingers crossed that it doesn't happen, but it, you know, at some point in Connor McDavid's career, there's going to be high hits thrown at him. There's going to be late hits thrown at him. Guys are going to target him just because of who he is and what he can do. And I do wonder if we won't be sitting there going, man, it's, if only they had given him a game or two, and then we could point to that and say, okay, anyone who touches him is going to get it too, because the precedent's been set.
Yeah. And Oilers fans, if you don't like that take, April Fools.
Yeah. Just April Fools. Check your calendar.
Yeah. Come on. That's not what we really think. Okay, so I'm going to run through, like I said, Nate McKinnon, Sean, is the reigning Lady Bing Trophy winner. Now I'm starting to think Nate McKinnon throwing the helmet at Connor Garland on Wednesday night, is that the dirtiest or shadiest thing ever done by a reigning or a previous Lady Bing winner? So I'm just going to run down the list of Lady Bing winners. Okay. You stop me when there's like a moment that comes to your mind. You're like, oh yeah. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Alex Barkov.
Don't remember him doing anything.
Okay. William Carlson.
Nope.
Okay. Johnny Gaudreau.
Johnny Gaudreau, I feel like there was something, and this is the thing. I feel like with Johnny Gaudreau that there was something with the Leafs where he took a stick swing or something at somebody, and that is the thing with these guys. Everybody for their own team is going to, I'm sure there's somebody out there yelling at the at us right now, like, you don't remember that Barkov did this to my favorite player 6 years ago? And nobody else notices. I do feel like with Gaudreau, there was something. But no, he tends to be a pretty clean player. He definitely didn't throw his helmet at anybody.
Yeah. In fact, I'm having a hard time thinking of anybody who's thrown a helmet other than...
No, you know, the only, and again, this is my Leaf fan perspective on this. The closest that I can remember is there was a situation where Darcy Tucker got in a fight. And during the fight, he grabbed the other guy's helmet, kind of pulled it off, and then threw two punches with the helmet still in his hand. And he got kicked out of the game for that, and there was talk that he would be suspended, and then he wasn't, I believe. I think he got a fine, but the league's reasoning was that they said it was accidental. They said he didn't intend to do that. He grabbed the helmet, and it was stuck on his hand, and that was their reasoning for not suspending him. So, you know, with the Nate McKinnon thing, as funny as it was, this is something the league is going to look at, because you can't throw equipment at somebody, and you know the way he did it, a little underhand toss. It's not like it was going to, you know, put anybody at risk of injury. But you know they're going to look at it. I wouldn't be surprised if they threw in a fine just to make clear to everyone that hey, you can't be throwing equipment at guys when you're upset.
The only helmet thing I can think of, I think it was a Chicago Winnipeg game a few years ago. Remember when Adam Partey's helmet came off and the fan took Adam Partey. It was Adam Partey, wasn't it?
I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah.
Took his helmet and put it on. I'm like, yeah, that's just,
the fan who was, you know, maybe he was pretty, he was enjoying the game, let's just say. Yeah. And he put the helmet on. That was, that was a highlight. I've seen, I can't remember players throwing things. We've seen coaches do it. We've seen coaches, Tom Webster threw a stick, and Robbie Ficoura threw the bench once, which was, that might be the all-timer as far as throwing things. Other than that, it's kind of, you know, it's Matt Sundin throwing the broken stick into the stands, which he did get suspended for, but that was because he put it into the crowd where, you know, you can injure a paying customer. I can't think of too many other examples of players, throwing things at each other.
Even a water bottle. I can't think of a goalie taking the water bottle off the top of his net and throwing it.
No,
like in my mind, I can't picture it.
Dominic Hasek threw his blocker at Peter Bondra.
Yes.
During a play. Yep. I remember that one, but it wasn't much of a toss. And I don't think he got any additional, I'm sure he got a penalty for it during the game, but I don't think there was any of that. So it is rare though. You don't see the guys, the McDavids and the McKinnons, lash out like this very often. It does happen, but it's not common.
No, exactly. Like I said, so as I look through the history of the Lady Bing, I was like, man, I think this might be the weirdest thing anybody who's won the Lady Bing has ever done. And the last question I have for you on this Lady Bing. So in the history of hockey, Sean, if I asked you if I said to you, who is the most gentlemanly player of all time? Who comes to mind for you? Like,
you know, it's funny. There's
classy and gentlemanly.
Yeah. Beliveau. Yeah. I mean, if you're talking classy, Beliveau is definitely up there. Yep.
Let me stop it right there. How does Jean Beliveau, who right away, top of mind to you, classy, gentlemanly, he never won the Lady Bing? He never won the Lady Bing.
Jean Beliveau not only never won the Lady Bing, he had a couple of seasons
with like 100
where he had
pims?
Over 100 penalty minutes. And this was back in the day. This wasn't 100 penalty minutes in the 80s. This was back in the day when that was a lot. Because I remember I wrote a thing last offseason, I think, where I said, okay, what could we do if we took a team full of Lady Bing winners and we put them against a team full of guys whoever led their own team in penalty minutes? And Jean Béliveau ended up on the penalty minute team because he led that Montreal Canadiens team back then. You know, there were no enforcers back then. If you had 140 penalty minutes, you were probably going to lead the team. And it was pretty crazy. And then my favorite guy in that whole piece was Stan Mikita, because he qualified for both teams. Stan Mikita is another guy that a lot of people would say, you know, cleanest, most gentlemanly player. Stan Mikita was a dirty, nasty player for the first few years of his career. And then he just decided to stop playing that way. And he flipped the switch and became a guy who almost never saw the penalty box. It was one of the strangest and most amazing mid-career transformations that we've ever seen from a really elite player.
Yeah, so listen, McDavid, MacKinnon certainly getting the headlines this week, but so too, Sean, the Buffalo Sabres finally bust out. They win a game. And I love the fact that on Wednesday, you were watching Toronto-Winnipeg in a huge North Division showdown, and you're like, I kind of want to watch Buffalo to see if they can close out Philly. At what point do you think Sabres fans exhaled? They had a multi-goal lead in the third period, but having blown a 3-0 lead 48 hours earlier, at what point in that game do you think Sabres fans actually relax? They're like, oh my God, we're going to win the game. When they made it 6-1?
I think, I was going to say, how late was it? 6-1? I mean, it was something like 3 minutes left. I feel like that was kind of the moment where maybe you felt some relief, but maybe not. There may have been some that were still saying, okay, let's hold on, because definitely after that Monday meltdown, you didn't feel safe when it was 4-1 for sure. You were just kind of waiting for the next goal to go in, and then the next one after that, and here we go again. But the good news for Buffalo is that they're playing a team that's probably just as damaged right now as they are, as in terms of the psyche and in terms of waiting for something bad to happen.
I just can't believe what is happening, though. Honestly, I can't believe what is happening with Philadelphia. And this is a team that almost won their division last year, Sean. The Carter Hart stuff has been really interesting this week. He basically got put on the shelf by Alain Vigneault Monday and Wednesday. Look, Vigneault's point was, you need to get kind of your game sorted out, get yourself in the right headspace, come back, stop some pucks. But like, I look at Philadelphia, and I know that Buffalo has been the most disappointing team. And I think Buffalo takes a lot of oxygen from hockey fans. That's where we put a lot of our emphasis is on the Sabres. I can't help but think in a month, I saw the stat, Sportsnet had the stat, the Sabres save percentage in the month of March was 831. That's some, like, you're not even winning in the 80s with that.
That's
style
amazing.
Of save percentage.
There are so many awful Buffalo Sabres stats floating around. It's just stunning. But and that's the thing, right? Like, I was on the radio in St. Louis this week, and they were saying, what's wrong with the Blues? Because that's another team that's sort of spiraling. And I said to them, so much of my job involves looking at a team that is having unexpected results and trying to think of something to say other than it's the goaltending. And, in St. Louis, Jordan Binnington's not having a good year. That's most of it. Buffalo, I mean, they went into the season with the same goaltending that wasn't good enough last year. And maybe you wouldn't consider that a surprising result. But Philadelphia, I mean, right there, I know we can all sit there and wring our hands and say, what's going wrong with the Flyers? They had a goalie that they thought was one of the very best in the league, and he's been awful this year. And not just awful in the terms of a slump, but he seems broken right now. And, you don't want to – it's never just one guy. It's not like team's playing great, and it's Carter Hart's fault entirely. But that's it. You pick any team in the league that is built around a guy they think is an elite goaltender, and you say that goalie's going to be an 880 goaltender this year. They don't make the playoffs. That's it.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating. I know in Philadelphia, so it's certainly a story to watch here, and people are saying maybe Alain Vigneault is on the hot seat. So it's
not been a good year for the people who say that Alain Vigneault is a guy that comes in, makes a big difference in year one, and then immediately starts losing the room, and that's been the knock on him for a lot of his career, and this is certainly not this year is certainly not helping.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, Everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Sean, I got to ask you about Erik Karlsson's sound bite this week. And I use the term sound bite because you know I like myself some bad puns. But
very good.
Have a listen here. This is so Erik Karlsson Tuesday night scores two goals in regulation time and then gets the shootout winner, full scale slap shot, full clapper, wins it. Then he gets to the press conference and he is asked by a reporter in the Zoom conference. Well, have a listen. And what I want to paint the picture for the listeners, Erik Karlsson is sitting at the podium with an apple. Have a listen.
All right, Erik, is that the best offensive game you've ever had? Two goals and essentially a hat trick when the game winner in the shootout?
Not even close.
Okay, Sean, I got to tell you, that is maybe the ultimate power move that I've ever seen a greater power move by anybody in the NHL than to have an apple with them at a press conference, kind of take a bite and just dismiss a question in the manner in which Erik Karlsson did this week.
Yeah, and you know what? I've talked about this before. I'm coming at this as somebody who has sat in those press conferences, put my hand up, asked some questions. I'm sure I've asked some dumb ones. And I generally don't like it when athletes, coaches, whoever, give you the short answer, give you the, you know, that was a dumb question thing. Because, look, we're all trying to do our job. It wasn't a great question. This is Erik Karlsson. Of course, he's had a better game than some mid-season game for a Sharks team that's going nowhere. This is a guy who almost single-handedly dragged his team to a Stanley Cup final. So yeah, he's had better games. It wasn't a great question, but I still feel like you can offer up a decent answer, not try to embarrass somebody, not try to make a show out of it. But apparently, I'm willing to make an exception as long as you bring a prop with you and you've got that ready to go, because it was the apple bite that just made it. And, to the point where now I'm sitting here like looking at all the other guys where I'm kind of tired of watching their press conferences and going, is this maybe the difference maker? Like, do we send John Tortorella up there with an apple or like a corn on the cob or something and give him something to just bite into when he does his whole tired shtick with the media? I feel like that would just breathe new life into the whole thing. Erik Karlsson really might be onto something here. You can be rude and dismissive on your answers to reporters, but you got to have a snack with you.
Yeah. I'm also thinking like this would never happen. It would be amazing if you could get you get like a glass of wine and you can swirl it, something.
That'd be good. Yeah. Just like something. Get creative. Everybody can have their own gimmick. Somebody can snap into a Slim Jim, somebody else can, there's gotta be something where you take a long drag of coffee or something. There's all these possibilities. I feel like this was an untapped. There's sponsorship potential here. Like let's get on this NHL. There's got to be something. It would be helpful for us too, because if I'm sitting there asking a question and the guy I'm asking the question to suddenly starts peeling a banana in the middle of my question, okay, that gives me an indication that maybe it's not going well. Maybe it's time to wrap it up.
Yeah. So
I think we all win if this becomes the new thing.
See, I think the ultimate power fruit, the power move is a pomegranate. You want to talk about flexing. You roll into a press conference with a pomegranate. There's just no respect for anything or anyone around you. That's what I
absolutely. Mean. That's, you know what? That would be just, no questions. We're good. We got it. This guy brought a pomegranate to the press conference. We're going to read the room here and take a pass on it.
All right, Sean, I know we've probably given you an idea for add some fruit. I love your idea of bring John Tortorella up there with a corn of cob while answering questions. But the one column that I loved that you wrote this week, because the quirky rules of the NHL. What was great about your column this week is I feel like I've watched this sport all my life, and I read that column like, oh, actually, I didn't know that there's a potential for a 3-minute power play. I didn't know that you could have the one I want you to explain. This is amazing to me. Is that there's a situation in the rule book where a referee can award a penalty shot if a team, you know, if the team that makes the mistake or is penalized has too many skaters on the ice. Could you walk our listeners through what scenario would happen where a referee decides to award a penalty shot based on too many men on the ice?
So this is one of my favorite things to do because I feel like among hockey fans and media, we do a lot of complaining about the officiating and about the rule book, but I feel like I'm one of the only ones who's actually has so little going on that I've sat down and read this thing. And when you do that, it's a fascinating document because there is all sorts of stuff that's in there that's 100 years old, has clearly never been updated. There's all sorts of stuff that you think is in there that is not. It's not mentioned anywhere. And there's a lot of stuff that, you know, frankly, doesn't really match how the game is actually officiated on the ice, but it's still in there. And every now and then I like to just go through and pull some stuff out that I suspect a lot of fans wouldn't know. And yeah, this is one of them, that there is a scenario where too many men on the ice can be an automatic penalty shot. And, you know, I'll pause here while a cold chill runs down the spine of every Boston Bruins fan, since that seems to be their trademark move. But it is something that it's not a common occurrence. And, you know, in fact, it's something that arguably you would never see because there's two criteria above and beyond just having too many men on the ice that have to come into play. One is that it has to be either at the end of regulation or in overtime. It has to be at a time where a 2-minute minor for too many men could not be served in its entirety. And then the other thing is that it has to actually be a special type of too many men that a lot of fans don't even know is spelled out in the rule book, which is an intentional too many men, an intentional illegal substitution. If the referee thinks that a team has intentionally put too many guys out there, as opposed to just the standard version of, hey, we screwed up, somebody got confused and jumped on. If he thinks it was intentional, that can be a penalty during the game, but in overtime or at the end of regulation, it's a penalty shot. And you might think, why would you ever intentionally send too many men on the ice? But there's actually some reasons. I mean, you can imagine if Connor McDavid winds up from his own zone and he's coming in and he's got either a breakaway or a clear rush, yeah, maybe it makes sense to have somebody jump off the bench onto the ice and get in his way, and you figure you got a better chance of killing the 2 minutes than stopping him on a breakaway. That could be intentional. The other way that it comes up, and we can thank Roger Nielsen for this one, is that many years ago, Roger Nielsen realized if I'm down 5-3, and let's say there's a faceoff in my own zone, 5-3, like I'm killing a 5-on-3 power play, I can't lose any more players. If it's the end of the game, if there's 30 seconds left, I'm killing a 5-on-3, I should just send out extra guys. What can they do? They can just give me another penalty. It doesn't go down to 5-on-2. It stays at 5-on-3. I'll just keep sending extra guys off the bench. I can send my whole bench out there. It doesn't really matter. And so because Roger Nielsen had the twisted mind to think of that, the NHL actually put this rule in there saying, if it's an intentional, and in the referee's judgment, he can turn around and award a penalty shot if there's not enough time to serve the minor. I'm not aware of it ever having happened. Somebody in the comments is telling me it did in like a Rangers game in the 90s that rule was actually called. I don't remember that, and I can't remember ever seeing it. But there's a lot of stuff in the rule book that you've never seen before, but it's still there, and it could happen someday.
You know, the best Roger Nielsen kind of just trying to go outside of the rules, I remember, and I think this is when he was coaching in juniors, maybe in Peterborough, but when he would have his goalie pulled at the end of the game, so there, let's say his team was down by a goal, he would pull the goalie but tell the goalie, leave your stick on the ice across the crease, across the goal line.
Yep.
So if the other team was shooting from their own end and they tried to score, it would hit your stick and it wouldn't go in. And they actually had to alter the rules to say, yeah, actually can't do that. But that's the type of, like, it's almost Belichickian, if I can use it. You think of Bill Belichick, yeah. And he always thinks about, okay, these are the rules. That's great. How do I circumvent them in a way that technically isn't illegal? That's what Roger Nielsen did in hockey for years.
For years. I mean, the guy was a genius. Another one of his was, He wanted to know, if there's a penalty shot, can I put a defenseman on the ice instead of my goalie and just have the defenseman charge out and try to knock the puck away? And that, because that ends the attempt. And there's another rule in the rule book that you can't do that. And B, you can't even swap in a new goalie for a penalty shot without leaving him in the game. And again, that traces back to Roger Nielsen. I just love this idea, especially in an NHL and in a hockey world where everything's so conservative and everything's, well, you know, we don't do it this way. And we have to remember, you know, we're just going to keep doing the same thing that the last guy did, that you had this genius like Roger Nielsen just sitting down and going through the rule book, coming up with all of these little loopholes and exceptions and forcing the NHL, who don't like to update this document very often, to go in and be like, all right, Roger's at it again. We got to come up with a new rule.
Yeah. You know, Roger, I had a chance to work with Roger Nielsen. I used to work in the PR department of the Ottawa Senators, and Roger was our assistant coach. And I remember he would phone me. Okay. This is the classic Roger Nielsen. He would phone me. They'd be on the road somewhere. I'd be, at the offices in Ottawa. He would phone me. He's like, Ian, I need you to go to my office and look up something for me. So I'm like, yeah, of course, Roger. So I go to his office and I'd be on the phone with him, and he'd say, okay, I need you to look in my files. And let's say they were playing, like, I have this distinct memory for some reason of him asking me to look up something on Keith Primo. And he's like, he would have these handwritten notes, and I looked into this game file, pulled it out. And he's like, okay, just read to me what it says under Keith Primo. And I'd be like, yeah, it says squiggly. He's like, okay, perfect. Thank you. That's what I needed. Like, for whatever, he had these weird terminologies for, he'd be like, yeah, that guy's squiggly, or that guy, like, but he had them written down, and I don't know what they meant. He would just phone me randomly, be like, I need to know about Keith Primo. Okay. Well, yeah. Here's what you said about him the last time we played. You said he was squiggly. Well, okay.
Like, sure, it meant something. Yeah. They probably won the game that night because Roger Nielsen's on the bench just
yelling,
looking
squiggly
down at a little notepad. Yeah, whispering into someone's ear, it's time for Project Squiggly, and off they go.
Yeah. Oh, man. Good times.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right. A reminder that you can always connect with us. We love to hear your questions for us. You can leave us a voicemail. We love those. Leave us a voicemail. 845-445-8459. 845-445-8459. Drop us a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you. You can also send us an email. You can reach us that way. The email address is theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. Theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. And Sean, that is what Warren from Raleigh has done. Warren has dropped us an email from the heart of Canes country and says, hey guys, I appreciate all the love for my Carolina Hurricanes, but when is the National Hockey League's national press going to notice Martin Nekas? He is one of the league's emerging superstars, and yet it seems like nobody outside of North Carolina is talking about him. Plus, fun fact, you can't spell Canes without Nekas. That comes in from Warren in Raleigh. And look, he's having a really nice season, right? Almost a point a game. He's what, 22 years old? Really nice young player for the Carolina Hurricanes. But I don't know. Has he reached the point where he needs national love?
Yeah. I mean, Warren from come on, Warren. I can spot a Sarah Sivian burner account. And I know what's going on here because this has been a bandwagon that Sarah's been driving, of course, which is, and I think it was a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, where she wrote that we were about 3 months away from the Canadian media suddenly discovering this guy and suddenly writing all these stories revealing how good he is to an audience in Carolina that would have already known it. And so I think if the math works out, we're still probably 6 to 8 weeks away from that moment coming true. But this is a real good player. on a team that, and I don't think this is a, well, Carolina's a small market situation. I think Carolina's just got a bunch of interesting guys, and there's only so much bandwidth to tell all the stories. And, you know, between Sebastian Aho, between Svechnikov doing what he can do, you know, maybe this is the next big story that that we're going to get to. But yeah, I suspect we're probably not far away from it. And then, yes, of course, the national media, Canadian media, everyone will come in and go, wow, this guy's so underrated. What best kept secret in the league? And Carolina fans will be pulling their hair out going, we've been screaming about this guy all season long.
Yeah, like you said, the Barkov-Huberto thing in Florida is the best example of those guys. Yep. It took them years to finally get a little bit of love, right? Like, I feel like my point to Warren and Raleigh or Sarah Sivian, come yep. back in five. If Netcats has five more good years, then we can maybe start talking about putting him on the national radar.
Right. Or if he gets traded to the Maple Leafs, in which case we will immediately elevate him to top 10 in the entire league status.
Yeah, there we go. All right, a little this week in hockey history to wrap up the show, Sean. And this week in hockey history, March the 29th, 2018. So, hey, we just have to go back 3 years. And when you say the phrase E-Bug, emergency backup goalie, the first name that comes to mind for a lot of people, David Ayers. But before there was David Ayers, there was Scott Foster. And I feel like Scott Foster's story has been somehow forgotten in the last 3 years, but he was the basically the accountant, practice goalie turned goalie for Chicago Blackhawks. He plays the final 14 minutes and change in a game for Chicago in a win over the Winnipeg Jets, March 29, 2018. How come have we forgotten Scott Foster because of David Ayers?
Yeah, I feel like we haven't. In fact, when I first saw your list for this week's show, and I looked at that and I was like, oh, he's got that right. It wasn't 2018. It wasn't that recently. It was longer ago. I don't remember exactly. And it was 2018. It was only 3 years ago. And it does feel a little bit forgotten because, you know, there had been emergency backups that had come in very briefly here and there, but this was the first guy to actually play like an extended amount of time, make some saves. His team won. He didn't get the win because of the score when he came in. But I think there's sort of two reasons that it's been overshadowed. Number one, the David Ayers story was, just an even better story and an even easier story to sell to a non-hockey audience, to say that, you know, this guy comes in a game that's still up for grabs against a good team. He gives up two goals right away. And then in the third period, he goes out there and shuts out this team. I mean, that's an easier story to get behind and get into maybe than the Scott Foster story. And then the other piece of it, and I remember seeing people mention this, you know, David Ayers, after his situation, he did the full on media blitz. He was going on talk shows. He was on ESPN. He was everywhere. He was making the most of it. He was doing what most people would do, get your 15 minutes and yeah, absolutely. Get out there. And when are you ever going to be invited on to do the late night talk show circuit in the US? Get out there, have fun. You're going to have a story to tell. Scott Foster, for whatever reason, chose not to do that. He didn't, he didn't really want to make a big deal of it. He didn't. He either wasn't comfortable, or for whatever reason, just didn't feel like getting out in front of it that way. So that probably let the story fade a little bit more than maybe it would have. But I do remember at the time it was a big deal, and then David Ayers comes along and just one-ups him so much that it's. Sort of like, all right, there's a new king in the E-Bug world.
The other This Week in Hockey History that I want to bring up is kind of related to what we opened the show with, a little April Fool's talk. Now, April the 1st, 1980, Sean, Montreal Canadiens defenseman Larry Robinson participated in an epic April Fool's prank. So I'll actually read a portion of this. Is from a book that Larry Robinson wrote. And in which he included this anecdote about what he did April the 1st, 1980. So just to set the scene for people, at this point, the Montreal Canadiens had won four consecutive Stanley Cups. This was the drive for five, the spring of 1980. And Larry Robinson gets on FM 96 radio in Montreal and does an interview with a young Mark Hebscher, who I had no idea was doing any radio work back then in the day in Montreal. But Mark Hebscher does an interview with Larry Robinson, okay? And this is the excerpt from Robinson's book. He says, quote, "I was scheduled to be interviewed on April the 1st by Mark Hebscher, who was the morning sports announcer on FM 96 radio in Montreal at the time. But rather than agreeing to the usual interview where I'd be asked for the 1,000th time if we could win a 5th straight Stanley Cup despite losing Scotty Bowman, Ken Dryden, etc., I asked him if he had any plans to pull a prank on his listeners for April Fool's Day. It turned out he had not, so I suggested one. And that morning, thousands of Montreal Canadiens fans woke up to learn I had been traded to the Los Angeles Kings for Marcel Dion. I'm a pretty modest guy, but I have to admit that my performance that morning was Oscar-worthy. I sobbed on the air as I thanked the great fans of Montreal for my years there." Larry Robinson tricked the fans into thinking he got traded for Marcel Dion and then cried on the air. I feel like this is the greatest prank ever pulled off in hockey history.
I think it has to be. That's fantastic. I've never heard that clip. I hope it's out there somewhere because that's a great one. And it's a great trade too. That's a fun one to think about right around that time. You know, Marcel Dion, French Canadian star coming to Montreal. That would have been something. I can only imagine what it must have been like to wake up and hear that interview on the airwaves. And I'd love to know how long they let it sit. You know, did they come on right after and go, we're just kidding? Or did they turn, was it like a War of the Worlds thing where suddenly an hour later we got the Habs front office has got to break into live programming to let people know it was only a prank. But that's an all-time great one. I really like that.
Yeah, it's as the story goes, Marcel Dion himself was woken up in his home in Los Angeles.
Oh man,
to tell him that he, what's this story that you've been traded? Like, it's
Hack
unbelievable.
Up. Oh well, that's great. I'm glad. Hey, it's a funny situation because I mean, you can imagine Marcel Dion going, "All right, I can't wait. Finally, I'm out of here. See you later, suckers." And gets to the airport, and they're like, "No, man, turn around. It was just a joke."
Yeah, and it's funny because you actually brought up Marcel Dion to the Habs. Was it last week?
Yeah, in the mailbag. Yeah. Somebody wanted to know it wanted me to come up with a trade deadline deal that could have happened. And then I ended up sending Marcel Dion to the 86 Habs so he could go win a Stanley Cup with them. And I thought that was a good one, but I didn't realize that there was this blockbuster had been announced on the air 6 years prior.
Yeah, no, amazing stuff. Hey, listen, this was a really fun show. All I'm going to think about all Easter weekend is John Tortorella with a corn on the cob at a press conference.
Let's make it happen. I'm telling you.
Let's do it. All right, this was fun. Have a great Easter weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Right on. Talk to you then.
All right. Hey, a reminder for our listeners, March Madness underway. The Athletics College basketball crew brings you The Ding U, presented by BetMGM. They'll cover all the action both on the court and at the sports books, grabbing insight from the Athletics College basketball writers and picking the brain of BetMGM's top bookmakers. Join them for their Final Four discussion coming your way on Good Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time on the Daily Ding feed and streaming on the Athletics YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining us for this edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. We'll get you again next week. A reminder, I'll be back on Monday to wrap up the weekend with Haley Salvian. Drop us an email, theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. Drop us a voicemail, 845-445-8459. And if you're not a subscriber with us, you can join us at theathletic.com/hockeyshow.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.